And welcome to the first official episode, as in the not intro episode, of Not Your Best Girl. We are your hosts. I'm Leanne. I use she, her, hers.
And I'm Kim. I also use she, her, hers.
Let's get moving with our first check-in.
It seems odd to have a check-in for the very first episode, but I mean, we've been watching anime since before we started this, and we will keep doing it during it.
What have you been watching, Kim, that is not part of the Momathon and is not a seasonal anime?
Okay, so this week, my housemate and I sat down and watched all of season one of Code Geass in 3 days? Maybe 4 days, but our first day, we didn't really do much, so it doesn't count. So I did that, and I'm still sort of processing my thoughts and how I feel about it. I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised by the amount of female characters there were, and I was also pleasantly surprised by how good Lelouch seemed to remain the whole time. I was under the impression, I guess, before starting that he would be more of a sort of light type figure based on the sort of things I'd seen around the show beforehand. Maybe that comes into play more in season two. Probably based on where the story's going, but I'm really enjoying it, and we're definitely going to pick it back up after a few days break. I also just finished, and by just finished, I do mean this morning, both seasons of Showa Genroku Rakugo Shinju, which is otherwise known as the Rakugo anime, that made me sob. Literally every episode for the last 5 episodes, I had to stop multiple times so that I could read the subtitles. And I don't have any coherent thoughts about that outside of my love for my darling Kiku and Konatsu. I'm sure that they will solidify into something, you know, interesting to talk about later. But right now, my insides are just kind of screaming and I want to walk into a lake. What about you?
So I've spent a lot of this week catching up on this challenge in the season, but I did one day just watch the entirety of Review Starlight, which has a longer title that I did not write down, and one day, and I had a great time. It felt like almost a love letter to Ikuhara anime while still being pretty much an idol anime. It definitely fell into a formula as it went on, but you know, the first few episodes I was like, I'm so happy that this is what it is. I find these characters really charming. I don't know how heavily my memory will stay. Well, maybe it will now because I have the gacha game. I had a lot of fun. They're all definitely in love with each other. And I don't even think that's a hot take. I'm pretty sure we're all supposed to just accept that, even if it's not quote unquote explicit.
I feel the same way about the characters in Rakugo Shinju, in that it is like very heavily implied that Kiku is absolutely in love with Sukaroku, to the point where the manga has been found on like BL shelves or in like LGBT fiction shelves. In several cases, the author has said that she doesn't intend it to be read as a romance, but all of her other works, as far as I know, are BL, and she said that that is a valid interpretation of the text, which means I'm taking it as canon, because we take what we can get, folks. And yeah, I'm glad that you enjoyed Review Starlight so much. I know it was like a total impulse watch.
Mm-hmm. I think it was the, oh god, what do I have to watch my VRV subscription before it runs out that I can't watch elsewhere because I don't have High Dive?
That's real. That's going to be me trying to figure out how to get another VRV free trial so I can watch the first season of Utano Prince-sama for our challenge.
Well, speaking of our challenge, let's check in on what we've watched this week or since we last talked on Hot Mamo Summer.
Yeah, so I was bad this week in that I did not keep up with the challenge as much as I normally do. Normally, I'm pretty good about balancing my time, but I think I got so sick of watching shows that I necessarily may not have wanted to watch because I felt like I should, that I impulse started Rakugo Shinju and Code Geass and finished them both. But before that, I finished off The Betrayal Knows My Name, or Uraboku, which I have a lot of thoughts on related to how it talks about gender, how it talks about like the transient nature of relationships, how it talks about sexuality in relation to both of those things. mostly in that I don't think it talks about them nearly enough. It brings up a lot of really, really interesting, you know, potential avenues to get into it, but the anime just sort of stops before any of that information is revealed. And I know that, you know, people want a second season. The manga kept going. I haven't read the manga, but I just don't see how it could have continued without delving more into the fact that it is clearly an important character beat, that the main character, who is a man, is a reincarnation of a woman who had up until that point been a woman throughout the rest of her reincarnations. And I was hoping that that would get delved into in a way that would maybe unpacked that a bit more, and it just didn't. But on the upside, I watched the first episode of Nobunaga Concerto, where Momo plays the lead character, and I was pleasantly surprised by how much I liked it. I definitely enjoyed the animation style more than I thought I would. It definitely also reminded me of like watching Archer, which was not a comparison I expected. Not in tone, just in animation style. It was just weird. It's a lot funnier and lighter in tone than I expected from a sort of historical anime. Most of the historical anime I've watched tend to be not, you know, dark in tone, but fairly serious. This one seems to be somewhat of a comedy so far, although like I may eat my words and it might have me like sobbing on the floor, you know, in like a day or two. So we'll check back in next week and I'll let y'all know how it goes.
I probably did my longest watch, not the longest show for this, but it just took me the longest time to complete, in that I watched all of Erica Seven. I'm really glad I watched the show, and I maybe wouldn't have watched it without this. Like I it's been on my like my long list, but who knows if I ever would have gotten to it, because the first few episodes didn't quite pull me in, especially because there's one episode early on where the main character gains the respect of the highest ranked woman on the crew because he saves her from a potential assault, which is just, I hate that. It's such a shitty way to like be like, how are we gonna get this woman to gain this kid's child's respect? But I think the show sort of deviated from that and didn't continue on that track quite like I was nervous it might. But I do kind of wish that maybe I'd had the impulse to watch this on my own, not watched it through the context of this challenge, because I think pushing it to be at a forced pace, which ended up being slower than anything I watched, maybe made it less enjoyable for me than if I had like just decided to pick it up when I felt like it. Because I think by making it sort of a part of the challenge for me, I checked out a little more, and I think that I sort of missed a lot of the parallels and nuances. I mean, not all of them. I do really appreciate that the main character is straight up named after the main character from Trainspotting, which I think is wild for a 14-year-old to be named after.
That seems a little absurd, and also reminds me that I have no idea what Erica Seven is actually about.
There's a couple ways to look at it, right? Whereas the big overarching view of it is that it is this sweeping anti-war anime with mechas. And the mechas, as I ended up looking up, like I was very curious about where all these names came from. Like the mechas are all named after synthesizers. And there's a lot of
that's cool.
There's a lot of music inspiration in this show. Not necessarily in how like music being incorporated into it, but it's very clear and it has been stated that it is kind of intended to honor certain types of music. Every episode is named after some song. So some of them are like, you know, standards that we recognize, and some of them are like, there are four episodes named after Experience 1-4, which are techno tracks. So it's weirdly a love letter to techno too. And the creator has spoken on that a bit as well. Half of it's big sweeping, you know, what's the state of the world going to be, anti-war, peace. But it's also at the core a love story, largely between Renton and Erica, which I actually think was very well handled in terms of, you know, normally I don't, you know, especially because they do seem younger. Well, Erica's age, who knows? But I mean, I'm sure there's an answer, but it's hard to. Renton is a 14-year-old though, and normally, like, I don't always, you know, buy into those romances, especially when they do. They are not intended to be aged up in any way. It's not like the free teenager, as in like free swimming anime teenager who looks 26 for some reason. They're supposed to be kids.
This character is 16 years old. Why did we draw him? Like, he's, 32, and his, female classmate, like, she's 12. Who knows?
Yeah, I can't think of any other anime that does that either. They're juxtaposed to all these other adults around them. I think we're supposed to see this as a very pure manifestation of their emotions for each other. And I will say what it does really well is that the relationship is very equitable. There is a lot of, they both go through the journey together. It's not one character tirelessly pursuing the other till she gives up, which, is awful. Or where we're only given one side of emotions, and then we are very much seeing, it's very clear early on that they care about each other and they love each other and that they will end up together most likely. But we are watching them both go through, well, here are these things we have to overcome and we'll overcome them together. I'm still kind of unpacking how I feel about motherhood in the show and how that's handled, largely because you learn pretty early on, so it's not a spoiler in any way, that Erica has three kids. And by has three kids, they're essentially three adopted kids. And I don't know, not through any official way, but she definitely views herself as their mother because she rescued them at one point, which, again, we'll not get into the details of what that was. And so from very early on, she is a mother figure. Definitely there are some jokes made early on from, like, about Renton freaking out about it. But I also really do appreciate that that kind of passes pretty quickly and he doesn't care. Like, he loves her and he loves them. And it just doesn't become a point. So I think that's really cool. There is a pregnancy arc that happens later, and I'm not going to talk about the characters or what. But I will say that you would never know she was pregnant because they definitely don't show it in any way.
Of course. Why would they do that?
Right, she's getting a sonogram and she's flat as a board. I'm like, okay. On her stomach, not... That would be a really weird thing to say. We're going to cut that. But she's getting... she's getting a sonogram and she's not showing at all. Which, does happen and I'm fully aware of that. But definitely I'm like, but a man made this, so I don't trust that. But I do wonder, as it does sort of connect itself to another trope that I tend to like. Spoilers, very light spoilers, but this character gets a makeover and a haircut and you don't know why initially, and then like the next episode it reveals that it's because she's pregnant. But therefore she's like, her design's less sexualized, it's less spoilers. And I still won't name the character, but this character, she's dressed pretty sexy when you first meet her, right? Like, shorts, crop top type deal. And then she has this, oh, I have to have this makeover. And at first I thought it was this like emotional thing and a reaction to her understanding of her partner. But no, it's because she's pregnant and her hair is cut short. She covers her whole body's then covered after that. So it does kind of go, oh, so are we equating some sort of loss of sexuality with pregnancy, which is a little yucky that you have to what does it mean to be motherly? But I could probably go on that forever, and I don't know if I want to. I still like her as a character. I think overall, the show has some pretty wonderful, complicated characters who, for the most part, you can't always agree with fully. If anything, the show maybe has too many characters.
That's wild coming from you.
I know, I love an ensemble cast, but I think it's because it feels like they don't always know what to do with them. Something like Durarara or Bakano, those casts are very much built to operate that way. And the time is very effectively spread out and interconnected. Whereas there's just so many characters on the Gecko State that which is the ship and sort of rebellion. They're painted by modern media in the show, sorry, as radicals, which I do say that's one of the things I thought was pretty fascinating and effective about the show, especially watching it now, was, you know, seeing, you know, what was the media take and the public take with the military and the propaganda that's being put out there versus the simultaneous demonizing of the quote-unquote radical Gecko State, who were ultimately way far more, while definitely not in their methods fully anti-violent, were striving towards a pacifist future. So yeah. I think potentially very potent to look at.
It sounds fairly similar in theme to at least the first season of Code Geass, and kind of goes back to what I was talking about with Lelouch being better than I thought he was going to be for the first season, in that, like, he is, you know, it's called Lelouch of the Rebellion, and he is very much a radical that wants to bring down the Britannian Empire. Still not sure if Britannia is supposed to represent, like, Britain or the United States based on the maps that were shown, but probably some combination of both of those things, seeing as it seems like they take up about a third of the world. But Lelouch leads this rebellion of, you know, the Black Knights, who are fighting for a founding of a sovereign Japan and basically taking Japan back from Britannia and, you know, stopping the subjugation of the Japanese people, who aren't even allowed to call themselves Japanese anymore. This does not necessarily go perfectly well for him, but he maintains those ideals pretty much through the first season. He loses his way a bit. Spoilers for Code Geass season one. He loses his way a bit towards the end in a way that makes you wonder as a viewer if he's really losing his way or if he's figuring out that his way has been different the whole time. And maybe the ideals that he's told himself he's striving for are not necessarily the ideals he actually is, which is way more interesting than what I thought was going to happen, which was the typical, like, oh, these radicals, you know, they have a point, but they just go too far sometimes.
Yeah.
And his, like, more liberal counterpart, Suzaku, who's very, like, we're going to work to reform the empire from within, would be hailed as, like, the major hero. But Suzaku doesn't really achieve much either, and the show does not necessarily come down on his side very often. It seems to still be showing Lelouch as having a point, which I actually really appreciated.
Yeah, I think where I am and still unpacking Erica Seven is that I don't quite know. I mean, it's very clearly not on the side of the military. There's no question about that, you know, and a lot of the characters in Gecko State are ones who've defected and realized that that method is not working for them. But I'm struggling with fully unpacking what the full mission of Gecko State is and how they view their ideals. And perhaps it's that, to be honest, I lost focus sometimes, and I think maybe I should have spent more time paying attention a little better.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. I got kind of lost in the politics of Code Geass as well. I think I'm just very bad at following large sort of globe-spanning political shows.
Yeah.
So once there's, you know, several nations involved and a lot of, like, strategy and intrigue with that, I sort of lost focus. Of course, my housemate is way more into that than I was, so he was adept at sort of explaining to me, you know, if I lost track of that a little bit, what was going on, which I was very grateful for, and I'm glad I didn't watch it alone for that reason, because I definitely would have lost interest during those bits. I'm not a big fan of mechs, I've learned, which bodes well for the fact that for this challenge, I've signed up to watch Mobile Suit Gundam 00. But who knows? I might get really into it. I like to go into things with an open mind. But I definitely found myself losing focus during the battle sequences, which does not often lend itself to great analysis of those battle sequences. But I am very interested in seeing where it goes in season two and how the politics develop. And I know I'm very behind the times because the show finished airing like 10 years ago. So what?
I mean, Erica Seven aired in 2006, so.
Great. Actually, the same year as Code Geass started, season one.
Yeah, in fact, potentially a potent discussion point.
Yeah.
I'll get my last thoughts out on Erica 7 just because it was 50 episodes.
Yeah, no, it deserves some time.
I don't think I'm saying anything particularly eye-opening. I'm just still kind of parsing through my own thoughts. So I'd love if someone who has watched the show would talk to me about it so I can figure out my stance on it. However, I should probably give like a couple minutes or to Mamo's character because that is kind of the point. Mm-hmm. He was there. He was there. He's fine. Yeah. The characters I think I liked most, I really wish had more time, which were the foils to Erica and Renton, which were Anemone and Dominic. I was always really drawn into their plot line and would sort of perk up when they came on screen and sort of, you know, tune in a little more attentively just because I was watching so much of it back to back. And even though we were given more time to the development of Erica and Renton's relationship, I was immediately more, yes, this. I want to watch this with Anemone and Dominic. I guess that's about everything I have to say on it. Other than, I guess I sort of lost my point earlier with was the ensemble cast. Just the massive, massive cast. Which Mamo's character sort of, you know, fades in to, right? Which is why I sort of forgot there was a Mamo watch as I was going through it. Because it's just... there's no way that could be the focus of my watch. It would have been impossible. Sometimes with so many characters, even though I liked a lot of them, I feel like they were really just lacking the development that they maybe could or should have had, because I definitely appreciate it. I mean, especially because there were a decent number of Black characters in the supporting cast, which you just don't really get in anime at all. And so I really appreciate it. And honestly, I think Bones in particular as a company, you know, does better with that, and better with, you know, not having all Japanese or white seeming casts. So I guess especially because I was so excited to see more diversity in anime, I really wish that characters like Gidget and Matthew and Hilda had been given more time to develop and given some focus ever, other than I feel like a lot of times they were very much their one note. This was something we know about the character, and this is all we'll see of them, which wasn't a bad note. It just like every other, there again, the whole ensemble cast. I think maybe the only one I can even think of who maybe of the supporting characters who felt very minor was probably Mamo's character Moondoggy. He had a little itty bitty arc of like, I feel like I do nothing, and now I'm gonna do this thing, and then he did it, and then that wrapped up.
I guess I'm excited to talk about perhaps that show more in depth. Once I finish Code Geass, and we can sort of not compare and contrast because we haven't both watched both of them, but talk a little bit more at length about anti-imperialist versus like war and mech themes there. Once I watch Mobile Suit Gundam 00, I'm sure I'll have more to add as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do want to eventually watch season 2 of Code Geass, perhaps after I remind myself what happens in season 1 a little more clearly, because it's been a while.
Yeah, you should do that. It leaves off on a big cliffhanger, but no, I feel that. You also started Tadakoi, correct?
Yeah, I started Tadakoi, or Tada Never Falls in Love, which I saw some, like, cheeky comment being like, oh my god, what's gonna happen with the show, and it'll call someone Never Falls in Love. It's like, I'm sorry, what? How many rom-coms do you go into and you're like, will they get together?
It's true. Like, I'm not sitting here watching Kaguya wondering if they'll ever get together.
Except I am also wondering, when will they get together?
Oh, I mean, but that's like the big central tension in these kinds of rom-coms, it seems.
Yeah, I started that. I will probably honestly finish it today. I'm enjoying it. There's definitely a few gags I was not happy about, but I can wait to talk about that more. I do like cats, though. I like big cats. I like Nyanko Big, that is the cat's name, which is a great name for a big cat. And there is one episode where you do get just his voiceover in it, and I'm like, this is what I wanted. That specifically is what I signed up for. It's been a while since I've watched a show for this challenge where Mamo's character ended up being my favorite. I think that will happen, which is good, because I've kind of missed that, especially after how, like, not there he felt for Erica 7. And then I started watching, which is bad because you should never pause a movie and just not come back in the same day. I started watching a movie, but I had an errand to run. Haikara-san Gatoru, I think I said, which I probably butchered a little bit. But Here Comes Miss Modern. So, yeah, and it's a two-film shoujo romance. I think I was, feeling like, oh god, I need to watch more shoujo. And so I started that very impromptu, and he's the romantic lead in that.
I'm excited to hear your thoughts, and maybe we can have a week where we talk about rom-coms in more depth, because I think that might be sort of, I don't necessarily want to split things by genre, but I am very interested in the discussion of, like, where is the tension in a rom-com?
Moving on, we still have to do our sort of discussion portion outside of just our check-in, which went a little long.
I think we should get used
to that.
Yeah,
that's going to happen. We almost didn't start because we were talking too much about anime before we started recording.
It's true. I had to be like, should we maybe save this for the recording?
Yeah, but wait, let me finish.
I appreciate that.
So I just want to kind of spend this discussion delving into what this challenge is and why we're doing it and what we've started to get out of it and notice, just because we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I realized that maybe we should give a more in-depth sort of description of how we decided to do this challenge and kind of what it's turned into. And yeah, like what we've gained or lost, I think is what I put in the notes, by doing it. And so I can give like just a little description, which was a couple months ago, Leanne and I were on video chat and it was very late. And this is how most of our terrible ideas show up. And we had both been watching a lot of anime. And we'd both specifically been watching a lot of anime that happened to feature Mamoru.
Oh, yeah.
Like we were not seeking him out at this point at all. It's just every show we watched, it was, oh god, he's here.
Yeah, and it was like a lot of weird impulses too, being like, I guess I'll watch Prince of Stride. Oh, hey, Mamo's here.
I watch Aka 13. Oh, there he is. He's the sexy young prince. Am I surprised?
No.
No. No, we're never surprised when he's the sexy young prince. At that point, we were kind of talking about that, and we kind of jokingly were both like, okay, but what if we watched every single Mamo show? Like, and we decided to not do that both. Like, we wouldn't each individually do it, because that was too much, and we were going to do it all in one summer, damn it. And we may still do it all in one summer. I think there's a good chance we can do it.
Wow, you are more hopeful than I am. I'm like, this is going to kind of turn into, like, brisk Mamo fall.
I don't know. I mean, I'm officially unemployed right now, so I will be picking up my end, because Leanne has definitely been watching more than I have, because I was working until last week and did not have the time or mental energy to watch that much anime. That being said, I've still watched over 120 episodes just for this challenge in under 2 months.
Yes, but we also never even put on the spreadsheet Inazuma 11 or the I think he's in Pokemon Black and White, all of those.
It's true. We also don't have Seven Deadly Sins on our spreadsheet.
No, we don't. And I'm very behind on what I told myself would be 10 episodes a week of Eye Shield 21. So I'm maybe a bit more pessimistic about getting this done in the summer.
I think we can do it. Summer extends into September.
Oh,
well. If we're going by official dates of seasons. I think that we both get really into these terrible ideas when we have them. This is not our first. It won't be our last, but it may be our most ambitious. And I think we both saw it as an opportunity to sort of expose ourselves to shows that we wouldn't normally seek out. I think that has been fairly successful so far. So we made a spreadsheet that includes pretty much everything that we could find that he's been in. And we included the category, the number of episodes, rankings, so we have an idea of how well the show is rated before we get into it. And we are logging our progress both on this spreadsheet and in a separate log, just for us to kind of keep notes as we go along of characters we like, themes we're seeing, rankings of the memosity of certain characters, which is just basically how well do we feel they fit into the archetype of the, like, classic Mamoru Miyano character, like Light Yagami or Okabe Rintaro, or like Dazai Osamu in Bungo Stray Dogs. You know, these very, like, big personality, like, sort of moody, angsty, big laugh kind of characters that tend to steal the scene. Or is it, you know, a more underrated,
understated?
understated or underrated performance that we, you know, I've seen in several shows since I started. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the basic summary of how we got here. We've been doing it for, like I said, under 2 months now, a little under 2 months. Yeah, a little under 2 months. So actually about a month and a half.
Yeah,
that sounds right. We've been doing this for about a month and a half now. I think we're making pretty good progress. And I definitely have experienced ups and downs in the watching process as I go through and decide, you know, what looks good to me or what feels right for the moment. But I think that I've really appreciated being forced to watch things that I wouldn't otherwise, not even things I wouldn't have known about, but things that I would have known about and just gone, eh, whatever, and kind of shrugged off. And I don't know if you feel the same.
Right. Well, I think one of the things that we, you know, talked about a little bit before we started recording today was that there are so often in anime recommendations you get top 10 anime or top 10 critically acclaimed anime, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or maybe you get it by year or season. But there are certain things that just don't get the same attention or are maybe a little too niche. There are a lot of shows that we've watched for this that we probably wouldn't have decided to watch otherwise just because they don't appeal to our very specific interests, but could be still fascinating. So, for example, Ajin is a show that I ended up really liking, but I would probably have not watched were it not for this challenge because I was a little bit like, oh, CGI animation in an anime, I'm not about that, which I'm still not really about. The animation mm-hmm. style wasn't really for me, but I got used to it pretty quickly, and I ended up really enjoying the show and the characters, and I mean, one of the most complex protagonists, you know, morally complex protagonists I'd seen in a minute, while you're still able to somehow believe his arc and root for him.
Mm-hmm.
But also Ko is the best character than that, and I don't understand why people don't love him. He's got big voice, big eyebrows, big heart.
Well, those are all you need.
Yeah, exactly. Especially the eyebrows. Definitely. I love eyebrows. Eyebrows are good.
Mm-hmm. Hard agree. I feel the same. Like, I dropped Bungo Stray Dogs because I got kind of bored of it after 4 or 5 episodes, but I'm really glad I picked it up. I recognize that the show has a lot that's kind of messed up about it. I think that's what tends to happen when one of your main characters' whole bits is that he, you know, consistently tries to kill himself and it's played off as a joke, especially when your characters are all based off of people who really existed at some point. But I also definitely found things that I really enjoyed about it in the main character, Atsushi's character arc, talking about child abuse in ways that I've seen other people feel sort of mixed about, but I felt fairly appropriately sort of grappled with the complicated feelings of anger and resentment, as well as, you know, recognition that maybe somebody was trying to help you that come with being the child of abusive parents. I also would never have watched Antique Bakery. And it's a show that is not necessarily highly rated, but I did find that its depictions of sexuality, of gay men, of bi men, were way less offensive than the, like, blurb described it to be, at least to me.
Well, the blurb
were very nuanced. Yeah.
Rough.
The blurb is bad, and the blurb does not necessarily give any information past the first episode, which I guess is how it's supposed to be. I found that past the first episode, it became a fairly nuanced study of character sexuality and how trauma may affect your sexuality and how characters relate to each other through relationships that might be romantic but might not, might be sexual, might not. I think that it definitely fell down on the job when talking about trauma outside of the main character Tachibana's trauma. So the main sort of arc of the show is this character Tachibana wants to start a bakery. He comes from a rich family. He's in his 30s and he goes, okay, I want to quit my job at this fancy firm and start a bakery. And he does. And he hires this very, very famous baker to be his patisserie in this bakery. It is clear from the beginning that Tachibana is struggling with trauma due to the fact that when he was a child, he was abducted for a period of time. And you're led to believe that this is partially why he wants to start this bakery. The problem is that the baker he hires is actually somebody he knew in high school, a character named Yusuke, who is lovely, but is introduced as like a man-eating gay who makes all of the men around him fall in love with him, no matter his sexuality. And Tachibana harshly rejected him in high school, and was the only man that had ever rejected him that harshly, and was severely cruel to him.
Was that a phrase the show used?
Man-eating gay?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I know. I was set off by it, too. It was sort of used by Tachibana as a joke, and Yusuke laughed it off, but still.
Do they subvert it at all? Like, do they subvert?
Yes, yes. As it goes, okay. He's not actually.
Frankly, then that's more impressive than I'm used to from anime, the fact that it did subvert that.
Yes, I mean, like, he's still, it shows him seducing men who previously consider themselves straight. The show does not say, you know, this character is not actually like that. But when the character is shown, he's given a very, like, wonderful set of character traits. He's a great mentor. He really cares about his friends. He really wants to help people. He doesn't come on to people in, like, a predatory way at all. You know, men tend to just flock to him. Most okay. of the time. And he ends up somewhat in a relationship with one of the other supporting cast, who's lovely.
Hmm.
And none of these characters are Mamo's character. Mamo's character is an ex-boxer. It's got a lot of things going on, and I have my problems with it. But that's more than you wanted to know about Antique Bakery.
Probably.
Got lost there a bit.
I talked like for 20 minutes about Erica Seven.
It was interesting.
Of course, then with, you know, the things that pleasantly surprise us, there is like, oh my god, I have to watch all of K. And I know K has like a big fan base out there. I am not of it. I guess I might be now just because I've been exposed to all of it. The bright side is that Mamo's character is one of the stronger points about the show. But god, the way that women are in that show is just... when they're barely there, and when they are, it's atrocious. It is horribly upsetting. The one woman who actually fights in the show is just so sexualized, wearing, you know, a tiny skirt. You get a panty shot like once every time you see her.
Ugh.
It's just so much, and it's so bad. There are multiple times where her entire uniform just comes off, and people are like, "Kay's a great show," and I go, "Is it?" Like, here's the thing. You watch enough of anything, you unfortunately get a little invested. Yep. And I unfortunately got a little invested, but especially with Fushimi and Misaki, like, I kind of went, like, reverted into, like, old fangirl habits and really, really cared about them.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I really liked, you know, because there are six movies. I'm sorry, there are seven movies. There are six that happen sequentially. I'd actually watched the other movie years back after I watched the first season and then did not continue the show. There is one of the movies in the set of six that I just really, really liked, and I can't help it. You take what you get when you binge something that is kind of trash.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what people say, that show is trash. I enjoy it, have fun.
It looks like the kind of thing that I'd really enjoy, even though it's garbage.
It's just, okay, the one thing I have to get off my chest is somebody, okay, in lighting, they put this, like, ugly ass gradient filter over every single shot in the entire series, and it's not even consistent. So if it's like going green to blue, it might face one character and then it'll face a character on the opposite side, and then the gradient will still be going in the same direction, so you can't even play it off as like the lighting of the world. And I think had that just been fine-tuned where like the gradient was consistent with the camera moving, then I would have accepted it. But then there's just like, but instead there's just this ugly gradient, which people talk about how pretty the animation in the show is. And I go, is it? I think it definitely has its own style to it, which I appreciate. And I think the animation would be pretty, but I just hated the gradient. Therefore, when you have these characters with like this bright red hair, put a green filter over it, and then you can't appreciate the colors of the world, even though it's 2 p.m. during the day.
Jesus.
Sorry.
I say knowing nothing about lighting, but that sounds atrocious. I understand it. I had to watch an entire season of Overlord, which I did do in one day, and it was not my favorite thing that I've done for this challenge, and I will not be watching any more of Overlord. I did enjoy Hamsuke, the giant hamster. He's the best character in that show. I just don't tend to like isekais as a genre. And I know that Overlord is not even really considered to be one of the best. And I'm sure that there are isekai that I would like. But I definitely just, that was one of those ones where I sat down and I was like, this is like taking a shot, right? I'm just going to do it all in one day. I'm going to get it over with. And then I won't have to do it again. And yeah. I did. And I won't have to do it again. All for Mamo, who was in, count them, 3 minutes of that show. He was, like, incredible. His character was hilarious, and I had a great time with him. But he was in 3 whole minutes of episode 11.
And maybe in more, but seems like maybe doesn't speak?
Yes, the character shows up in later seasons, but spends most of it disguised as the main character, so they don't even bring in Mamo to do any voice acting.
Spoiler, I guess.
We'll put a spoiler tag on that. Spoilers for Overlord, everyone.
I think maybe it's time that we move on. And now, let's talk about some of the worst parents in anime, which I really wanted to cut you off and string that in after you talked about Bungo Stray Dogs. I thought that would be like a really nice segue, but unfortunately, we kept going.
We can cut shit.
No. I had things to say too. It wasn't, we had more to say. It was just like, oh, what a great place to segue that would have been.
Anyway, in Bungo Stray Dogs, the main character is a product of being raised in an orphanage with a horrifically abusive parental figure. Here are some more terrible parent figures in anime. Brought to you by Kim and Leanne's Hot Takes.
All right, Kim, why don't you start us off with some of yours, and I might not agree with one of them, but keep going.
Wow. Okay. So I think that starting this section, it's important to acknowledge, like, the big ones so that people don't at us. One.
Yes.
Gendo Ikari from Neon Genesis Evangelion is obviously a horrific father. He's a bad dad. You know this from the first episode. You can see how Shinji's been affected by his neglect and abuse from, like, the first 10 minutes of the show. It's why I get so annoyed by the get in the robot meme. Because, of course, Shinji won't want to get in the fucking robot. His dad's a piece of shit and has given this 15-year-old child, like, horrific PTSD. I'm not going to say Shinji's a great character or, like, the most fun one to watch, but I think he's fundamentally incredibly sympathetic for this whole arc and this whole plot. And anyone who doesn't think Gendo's an asshole is an asshole. Also, moving on to Full Metal Alchemist, we know that Sho Tucker is terrible. Everybody knows this. But also, Hohenheim fucking sucks. Hohenheim is garbage, and the show points this out, and everybody's on our side here. I'm not going to elaborate on all of the reasons why Hohenheim is fucking garbage, but he is.
Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the show, I definitely, when he was like, should I die to save my son? I was like, please die. Yes, do that. I would like that. Then he doesn't, and then he dies, like 5 minutes later. I went, well, what a waste, Hohenheim. You could have died for something. Maybe Ed would have magic still. I don't know. Alchemy, excuse me.
You know, science magic. I also wish that when people talked about Full Metal Alchemist, they talked more about Risa's terrible father, who is just not a pleasant man to be around in any case, and who, like, literally scars his flame alchemy secrets onto his daughter's back in what I must assume is a very painful process, and just does not seem to, like, treat his child in any sort of affectionate or kind way.
Yeah, when you're so horrified by your father's actions that you voluntarily have someone burn your back so that nobody can repeat what he does, that's saying something.
Yep. Another easy one is Kaio's mom in Erased. She is like the textbook example of a horrifically abusive, physically abusive, verbally abusive, emotionally abusive parent. That is, in fact, one of the main driving forces of the plot in Erased, is how absolutely horrific she is. So that's another easy one. I hate Yato's dad in Noragami. I hate him so much. He's absolutely horrific. Noragami spoilers.
For me.
And I won't talk about the manga.
Okay.
Because there's also spoilers in that. But I will say it just gets worse. There are also more horrific fathers in the manga that actually make Yato's dad look not fine, but, you know, better in comparison.
Oh, no.
I know. It's terrible. And also, I would like to give a plug for worst set of parents to Shoko Nodami and Renju Okiura in AI the Somnium Files, which I know is a video game. We're going to talk a little bit about video games here, especially narrative ones, especially Ushikoshi games. But they're both bad. Shoko is, like, you know, also another textbook, like, verbally and emotionally abusive parent. And Renju is incredibly neglectful. His only, like, redeeming quality as a father is that he recognizes this eventually and passes his child on to another somewhat neglectful but eventually world's okayest dad, Date. And we're very grateful for this, but Jesus. No, unfortunately, Renju is also very beautiful, and I do love him. But I do think he's a terrible father. I think that's his whole thing.
Unfortunately, just sexy also.
Yes. Unfortunately, also very sexy. And my honorable mention is that I actually think the mom in Toradora is not a good mom. I think she's a well-written character. I think that she makes a lot of very sympathetic choices. I think that she's lived a hard life. I think that I care about her and I care about her relationship with her son. I don't think she's a good mother. And I think I see a lot of people listing her as a good mother. But I think that if you raise your child so that he is actively worried about whether or not you will be able to feed yourself, not for money, but just whether or not you'll do it when he leaves for a weekend, you've made some wrong choices in your parenting. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah. I think for me, I'm maybe a little more willing to defend her, but I'm not going to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm not, like, that passionate on, like, that many anime dads. And then I realized that I'm mostly passionate on, like, terrible anime dads, and I yell about them a lot. And I don't know why I pretended I wasn't. Before I talk about dads, I do want to bring up every single parent in Stars Align, except maybe the adoptive parents who seem fine. But I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the kid.
There are a lot of them.
The parents aren't named. Oh, and Maki's mom is fine. The parents, as far as I understand, are mostly not named. I think Maki's mom does have a name, but I'm sorry. Every parent in that show is bad, but especially, maybe not especially, but I have a special resentment of Toma's mom, because Toma is such a good boy. How fucking dare you? How fucking dare you? Toma is a good boy. I don't
Toma's
want kids,
bad.
But I want Toma as a kid.
I do want kids, and I'd be so happy if my child turned out like Toma.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely have a lot of anger for Tosaka Tokiyomi. I think I remember being in high school and watching Fate Zero and being so livid. And just like, I'm like, there is no good deal to make here. I wonder if this is spoiler talk. It's hard because it's like depends on which you've consumed, Fate Zero or Fate Stay Night first. But if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I am talking about. Fuck him. Then I guess, like, you know, there's a lot out there. Like, I could, like, say, like, Henri's dad from Durarara, like, or I could say,
he's
like,
dead.
I do think there's a trend in anime where if the parents are shown in the show in any way, and if they're not dead, they're probably bad.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could watch Haikyuu and they all magically, like, just, like, don't have parents.
Suki has a mom who's shown in, like, an episode or two.
Right. I mean, like, they have
parents, but they're never there.
Yachi has the most parent than anyone has.
That's true.
And then she's gone. The big one, and the big one that I think a lot of people know, Endeavor can fucking die. I am not caught up to the manga, but my biggest fear is that the show is going to try and redeem him and try and make me care about him when I just don't think he has ever acknowledged what he has done. I don't think he has acknowledged, like, I do not want Todoroki to forgive him. I don't think he has earned that, and I don't think he will ever earn that. And if the show really pushes for a redemption arc for him and for Todoroki to forgive him, I'm going to lose a lot of respect for the content, because that's just not how those situations need to be handled, and that's a damaging narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess my last one is actually a mom, which is the you know, I wish I like remember the names of these characters, but you know, the mom from Hanebado. The show isn't good. The Badminton anime is not a good show, and it's mostly because of her. Because spoilers for Hanebado, if you care. Do you care?
No, I might watch it at some point, but I don't care about spoilers right now for it.
Yeah, so there's dual leads in the show, and then but the one who is, I guess, more prominently featured, like she's this like she's this badminton prodigy and has been incredible since she was a child, because her mom is like one of the best badminton players in the world. But her mom abandons her, so she has this huge complex and has a lot of trauma because of that. This character's best friend, Elena, who I remember her name because she is the only reasonable character in that entire show, talks to the mom and is like, why'd you do it? Like, why'd you do it and why'd you come back? And the mom was like, well, you know, I saw that she was playing badminton for me, but I needed to leave so that she could play badminton for herself. To which I and Elena, the only reasonable character in the show, the fuck? The show kind of crumbles because of her, and she is a terrible mom because she wanted her daughter to be better at badminton, which, like, I'm sorry, who cares about badminton?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's the last one from me.
Well, I think we basically kept those to five each.
Yeah. Oh, did we say five? I didn't even know.
I sort of internally said five.
Oh, because
then
like,
broke it.
I just like wrote down things I didn't like.
Incredible.
But especially Endeavor. Fuck you, Endeavor. So it's amazing that there is a character who overwhelmed my hate for Tokiomi. I like really, if you know me, you know, like Tokiomi is, I don't want to compare, but I just, the fire in me really, whew. Anyway, I think it's time for a wrap up with a, you know, maybe just checking in on where we are with seasonal anime. I know for me that a lot of the shows are just about to wrap up that I'm watching or already finished. So where are you, Kim?
Well, this season I set out to watch a bunch of ongoing shows and then I proceeded to not do that. So the only one that is still ongoing that I've actively kept up with, not just like started a few episodes and then dropped off with, is Kaguya-sama Love is War, which is a show that's talked about everywhere that almost everyone that I know watches anime watches and loves. And it is definitely, I've jokingly referred to it this season as my 22 minutes of serotonin per week. And I stand by that. I get 22 minutes of serotonin per week. It's from Kaguya-sama Love is War. And then I have to dispense that somehow throughout the rest of the week. But nothing feels as good as sitting down, pulling it up on a Saturday at noon to watch with my housemates. And I have cried watching it, and I love it very much. And the season finale airs tomorrow. I'm not ready for it. I'm not ready. I'm going to have to find another place to get my serotonin from. Probably the manga. I'm probably just going to read the manga. Because if they keep us in this romantic tension for as long as I think they're going to, I may combust. Kaguya-sama, if you're unaware, is a romantic comedy that follows the two members of the student council, the president and the vice president, at Shuchin Academy, which is this very high-level fancy high school, mostly for rich kids. And these two kids come from very different backgrounds, but they're both very prideful, and they are absolutely smitten with each other. Absolutely, like, full-on, you know, 16-year-old, 17-year-old puppy love, like, cannot think about anything but the other one, but they will not admit it, and they need to get the other person to admit it first, and that's the only way they'll win. And I think that the show does a very good job building nuanced characters based off of archetypes from rom-coms. I think it takes these archetypes and then makes them deeper through running gags and continuity, but also through occasionally very emotional sections. From what I hear, it's a very faithful adaptation of the manga. Manga-only fans seem to be very excited, actually, about this adaptation, which is not something I see often. And I am looking forward and also dreading watching the season 2 finale tomorrow, and will probably cry through the whole thing, even if it's just jokes, because I love all of them so very dearly.
I'm going to keep mine a little brief because I think most things we wrapped up by our next recording session, we'll probably do a little more of a discussion around this. But both, I think listeners finished last week, which as a show is fine. But I also, it was wild overlapping my watch of that with Erica Seven, because there's definitely a lot of inspiration that came from that. I was a little let down by the show, unfortunately, especially because I came into it being a Kage Pro fan and like loving Jin's work with music, and it just didn't enrapture me too much. I finished Tower of God, which finished up this week, way more positive on it than I ever thought I would be. I expected, you know, there's definitely, I think, a conversation to be had about it, but I will table that. Caught up on Kaguya, also looking forward to tomorrow. And I'm a little behind on Fruits Basket, which I'm sure is probably going to extend into the next season. I imagine it's a 24-episode season. So I might try and catch up with a couple more. I mean, I fully dropped Sing Yesterday for me because I just did not like it. But I might just go ahead and catch up with it just to have it done and under my belt. But that's it for me and what I've been watching. I think that's all we have for today. Anything else from you, Kim?
No, I think that we kind of covered a lot of ground today. Hopefully we gave folks a better idea of what we're actually doing with all of these terrible shows that we've decided to watch.
And some not terrible. I'm not going to like...
And some not terrible shows. They're not uniformly bad. They are, in fact, mostly very good. And I think that the lesson is that even in shows that may seem terrible, there's often a gem somewhere in there that just needs to be polished a bit more. Also, everyone please watch Showa Genroku Rakugo Shinju. Please watch the fucking Rakugo anime. I'm dying here.
I will.
Please do.
What if I just end every episode with watch Chihaya Furu? Bye!
You could be your bit. I would not turn... You know, that could be your intro bit, too. Hi, I'm Leanne. I use she, her pronouns. Please watch Chihaya Furu.
I think so. That's fair. That note, goodbye.
Bye.
Tune in next time.